following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network. Joining us now, live from Cairo, Eddie Uranian, Cairo, Egypt. Edward, our man in the Middle East. Edward's been with us 9 years, reporting on the John Fredericks Show. We love him to death. Plus, Edward, longtime veteran, CBS Radio News, and of the America's VOA, Voice of America. He's covered the Middle East for 25 years. Edward, great to have you, man.
Thank you, John.
The president goes to Tokyo, has a press conference. Let's look at the Iranian situation right now. The president's saying, look, I don't want war with Iran. I just want them to change their behavior. The Iranian's saying, hey, you know what? If it is, it is. We'll do what we have to do. We've survived U.S. sanctions, pressure for, I don't know, 50 years since Carter. We're going to continue to survive it. What happens now?
Well, I think we're going to see some skirmishes on the ground. I think Iran is going to do some proxy activity using its Hezbollah, its Houthi, the Houthis in Yemen, the militias, Hashd militias, Shiite militias in Iraq, and they have their own militias in Afghanistan, too. So I think they're going to give us a little bit of a hard time. I don't think they're going to escalate too seriously because I don't think they want a war at this point. I think the supreme leader is playing his cards, but I don't think he wants to get into a conflict either. And he's the bottom line, Ayatollah Khamenei.
So neither party wants war, right? That's obvious, right? It's in no best interest for anybody. But how does the United States now define success with Iran? What do they want Iran to do? Tom Cotton, yesterday, Senator Arkansas, said, look, we want the Iranians to change their behavior. What exactly, specifically, are they looking for the Iranians to do? And is that even feasible because of the whole safe face issue that goes on in the Middle East?
Well, I think the key issue is their ballistic missile program. I think that's what's got a lot of people worried because they've been working consistently on their intermediate and long-range missiles. They've been claiming that the long-range missiles they've been working on are actually intermediate-range missiles, which means they're able to go farther than they're claiming they are. That being said, I've seen some of their missiles in action. They fired them in retaliation after an attack on their Revolutionary Guard forces in the Kurdish province of Iran, and they hit inside Syria. It wasn't clear that they hit any target that they were aiming for, assuming they were aiming for anything. And a couple of them, apparently, according to Iranian missile experts, exploded before even getting off the ground. So I don't know that they're being very successful, but they're certainly creating a worrisome development by working on them.
All right, let's get to the arms sales deal. The president wanting to push forward with an arms sales deal to the UAE and to the Saudis, and Congress rejecting it, but the president says he's going to go forward and do it anyway. There's no question an obsession the president has, and I'm going to be critical of him here. There's an obsession he has with getting arms sales deals. I don't understand why it's in our best interest to keep arming people that take their bombs and blow school buses up in the war in Yemen and markets and whatever. But I guess the president's position is, look, we have to continue to arm the Saudis and arm UAE in case of some kind of a Iranian conflict or conflict with the Houthis that have fired rockets at the Saudis. What do you make of this?
Well, I think President Trump fairly soon after he became president, indicated he wanted to have strong relations with the Saudis. A lot of this is financial. The Republican Party has always, generally at least since the Bushes, had strong relations with Saudi Arabia. They get money from Saudi Arabia. The Democrats get money from Qatar. I think it's a sort of a bit of a tit for a tat. And the Qataris run their media operations criticizing the Saudis, and the Saudis do the same about the Qataris. And our two parties, political parties, are mixed up in these in the Gulf politics of these two countries as well. So you can understand that the Republicans would want to work with Saudi Arabia if the Democrats are working with Qatar. I mean, that's a broad brush I'm painting for you there, but a lot of it is true. The Obamas, President Obama, had good relations with Qatar, the Clintons, and you know, it's a financial thing to a certain extent, and a media thing as well. And each country, each Gulf country, has its own media. You know, they report about things, and sometimes their reports are totally different, and you don't know which one is telling the truth and which one is not. Putting it bluntly, I think Trump needs to have Saudi Arabia as an ally if the Democrats have Qatar as an ally.
When you say the Democrats, they want different administrations to do it in different ways, though you look at it now, it's kind of not as clear as you're saying, because there's a lot of Republicans that support Qatar, like Scott Taylor and others. There's a lot of Democrats that still support the Saudis. So, but one thing is interesting. It's if you look at the lobbying right in Washington by the three countries, right? You take Saudi, UAE, and Qatar, and you just look at the lobbying, Edward. The Saudi UAE lobbying presence versus Qatar is probably something like 25x as far as people and money. I mean, you weren't around Washington on K Street. I mean, you had so many people that are representing the Saudi and the UAE interest, and you know, a handful of tiny firms that represent the interest of Qatar. And so that our audience understands this, all foreign countries hire lobbyists to help them navigate their way through Congress so they can meet with certain people that advance their agenda. They lobby administration officials. It's all legal as long as you file the paperwork. Then you look at the money spent, and the Saudis and the UAE, their presence in Washington makes Qatar's look absolutely ridiculous. Does that have an influence on policy?
I think that the lobbyists may have an influence on the advertising and what people in the public might think. But in terms of the relations with people in Congress and the movers and shakers in Washington, a lot of that is not done through lobbyists. That is done through contacts with people who are people who are much more below the radar. And I think some of those, I don't want to go too much into detail here, but I mean, there was a report that I saw about Qatar building, buying up properties in New York and Washington and then renting some of them out at favorable rates. And I'm sure the Saudis do things like that too. So I don't think that's something that's different from the one country does something different. But at the same time, there are a lot of a lot of reasons, financial reasons, why someone might want to support one side against the other, which have nothing to do with American interests. And you see that with Israel as well. I mean, Israel packs a lot of clout in terms of lobbying and in terms of giving gifts to people. This is part of our political, domestic political problem. We need to probably have term limits and get rid of some of these people who are taking money from various countries that they shouldn't be taking money from, and from lobbying groups that they shouldn't be taking them from, unless, of course, they're acting truly in the interest of the United States. And I see a lot of them who I think are not.
You're on the John Fetters Radio Network. We're with Edward Uranian. Good to have you, Edward. Edward is our longtime analyst in the Middle East, veteran CBS Radio, Voice of America, and the John Frederick Show, and he's live in Cairo. Edward, let's get to the Yemeni situation. There's definitely a movement now in Congress to get the U.S. out of this war. In fact, when you're done, in about 20 minutes, I've got Senator Tim Kaine coming on, and this is one of the topics that we're going to talk about. There seems to be a growing sentiment in Congress to get out of this Yemeni war, where we're backing the Saudi UAE coalition there against the Houthis. Things have gone awry. The Saudis are incompetent. Everything is a disaster. They spent $1 billion. They have nothing to show for it. They're actually losing the war, as far as anybody can see. The humanitarian crisis in Yemen is beyond the pale. You've got children eating leaves off trees, starving to death on a daily basis. I mean, it's just a horrific situation. You know, remember we had Mattis saying we were going to get out of there? We're still there.
Yes. Well, I think this is a lot more complicated than that. And I think the remedy people are putting forth, just cutting ties with Saudi Arabia and the UAE, is just going to entrench the Houthis in Sana'a. And I think that may have been part of the goal of the Obama administration. I think maybe Obama had something to do with the Houthis getting to Sana'a in the first place, because there was no logistic reason they should have been in Sana'a in the first place. And yet somebody let them in. So I think this is a foreign policy issue that may have something to do with dividing Arab countries and dividing Yemen. Some people would like to see a north and a south Yemen, like there was back in the 60s and 70s, and I guess up until 1990 when they unified, something like that, or 94 maybe. So I can understand why some people are pushing for that, because, you know, they've been pushing for it anyway. But saying that the Saudis and the UAE are incompetent, I mean, they're incompetent maybe because they kill a few civilians, but we've been killing a lot of civilians, too, in Ramadi, in Fallujah, in Mosul, in Raqqa. I mean, I see it all the time, and our people just deny it, and the Pentagon correspondent usually comes out and they say, oh, well, our Pentagon spokesman says that that we didn't kill any civilians. So that's it. They didn't kill any civilians, even though all the anecdotes on the ground say they did. So, I mean, I don't think anyone that uses bombs from the air doesn't kill civilians. I can't blame them any more than our coalition forces for bombing civilians in Deir Zor, Raqqa, in you know, all those little towns that they bombed in Iraq as well, under the guise of attacking the Islamic State group. And the Islamic State group, for the love of me, I mean, after 32 years in the Middle East, I would love to see some news media group tell me who is behind that Islamic State. I have some ideas about who's behind it. There are a lot of people who are probably behind it, a lot of countries behind it, a lot of intelligence agencies, but they never talk about it. Why? Because I don't think they want to accuse the people who are behind it. So it's a big mess. It's a big mess, and I think the interests in Yemen, the powerful interests at play are that some countries would like to divide it. They would like to use the South. They would like to have maybe Iran with an influence in the north. That's a policy goal. That's not has nothing to do with the Saudis bombing civilians on the ground.
So, based on your analysis, Edward Yeranian, what's the best we can do here? I mean, what should the U.S. position be? Divide Yemen? What should it be? I mean, everyone is concerned about the Houthis and the territory they've gained there, but they're entrenched. They're actually winning that war as far as, you know, if you put checkers, if you put pieces on a map board, they're actually winning. And Iran has spent, I don't know, a couple million dollars. Mohammed bin Salman has spent $2 billion, and he's losing the war. What's the end game? I ask this question to everybody. What's the end game? Nobody has an answer.
Well, I think the Iranians don't want to solve this problem because they would like to keep an open, oozing sore on the border with Saudi Arabia, with the Houthis shooting drones and missiles into Saudi Arabia. That's a pressure point they have, the same way they put missiles in Basra aimed at our forces, our bases, the same way they use their Shiite militias in Iraq against us if they need to, the same way they use their Shiite militias, Hezbollah, against Israel. These are not problems they want to solve. I mean, the Lebanese border, how many times the Israelis tried to solve that problem? They pulled out of southern Lebanon, and Hezbollah just picked another pretext that there's one little town on the border that hasn't been liberated, and kept its militia on the border with all those rockets it has in people's basements. So I think the Iranians would like to have their peons all over the Middle East. I don't think they care about solving some of these problems, and I don't think you can solve some of these problems. Ideally, the Yemenis should be at the table negotiating, so they find some some solution between them, amongst them. But it's not happening. And certainly by not arming the Saudis or taking away their U.S. equipment, that's not going to solve the problem. It definitely not.
So you would be, based on your analysis, you would be in favor of continuing the arms sales?
I think that it's inevitable. I mean, if you want to keep one side on a keel with a par with the other side, you basically have to arm them unless you want the other side to run over the side you're supporting.
Right.
And I don't think we want the Iranians or the Houthis to run over the Saudis or the Emiratis.
Edward, final thing. Let's talk a little bit about the Gulf and the crisis, that blockade that's still going on, coming up now. On its, what, third year, I guess. I kind of lost track of it. That has really hurt all of our relationships in the Gulf because it's rendered the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, basically meaningless now. There is no cooperation with this blockade, which has been ineffective. Qatar's gone way beyond that. Their economy is stronger now than it was. I mean, is there ever a day where the Saudis just drop the sword and say, hey, this just didn't work, and they reopen up the lanes? Or is it now an ego thing, a saving face thing that you get when you deal with these countries in the Gulf, Middle East? Is there an end to this in sight?
Well, I think a lot of it is an ego thing, but there are occasional issues, occasional incidents where you see that they're trying to improve relations. I mean, the Saudi King Salman invited the Qatari Emir Sheikh Tamim, to the Arab Summit and the Gulf Summit in Mecca next weekend on the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a possible overture to Qatar. I'm not sure whether they're expecting a quid pro quo. Qatar needs to do something in return mm-hmm. for us to improve our relations with them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it was based on the fact that they were supporting different groups and different countries in the Middle East. And, I think the accusation that Qatar is supporting terrorism in some instances, well, the Qataris say that the other side is supporting terrorism, too. So, I mean, let's just be neutral here and say they're not supporting the same proxies all over the Middle East. And perhaps they need to sit at the table and decide, if they're going to back off supporting certain groups in order to have harmony among themselves.
Great analysis, as always. But look, it is a big development that Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, did invite the emir to that summit at the end of May. I think that's a step in the right direction because the U.S. is better off with a unified GCC than it is now with a split down the middle. Edward Uranian, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being with us. Edward Uranian, our man in the Middle East. Thanks, Edward. Great segment, as always. And let's go to Colonel Mike. Colonel Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, John. I watched a little bit of the Mueller just this morning. You know, I'm about an hour behind you guys, and if you want to talk about swamp, it's like 100 degrees with 100 humidity in Laredo. Mm-hmm. But it's really a backpedal. Now the Democrats are saying, well, he's confirmed what we said all along. I mean, it's just joke time, man.
Well, I mean, what did you think of the objective that was?
they can't do any better. That's it. It's maxed out. You know, now they're just going to have – I don't watch cable, but I watch a little bit of MSNBC, and they're parading these 20 people out there and – You know, they think that they all have it nailed down, and now we're going to have them. You know, it's another one of these, we got them now. This has been going on for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And from what you see on these polls, whether they're real or not, all American people have discussed it, John. They're saying, you know, let's govern, let's go forward and have an election next year. Mm-hmm. Both sides are really getting, you know, TO'd, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But the good news is, I want to tell you, people are Astro fans out here, man. People are Astro fans.
Well, you're in Texas, right?
And they got the Rockets. We're ready for a big A storm. I don't know if they bumped two flights on me already. I don't even know if I'll get home today or tomorrow. But I know up in Northern Virginia in the Panhandle over there, it's really going to be bad tonight coming in, if I get in.
So tell me what's going on. I know you met with some – you're at the border.
Oh, yes.
I'm, with some border patrol
I'm at the border for 2 days, John. We're doing some research with CPB. These guys are the greatest guys, front line, first guys. You know, we watch some of the crossings. They're limited on equipment. They're limited on budgets. Their staff is, like, cut in half. You know, we're in a hot spot. We're in Laredo South and Laredo North and Zapata. the region in Texas. I mean, it's really, this is not the major stuff. This is not the caravan, but this is the dailies, you know, 17, 22, 34, you know, as many as they can get. And we stayed on the border last night up till about 10. And it's amazing. They go through these currents and, you know, a little bit of tides, and they don't stop, you know, and they know when you're moving one truck this way. We were in action yesterday. We saw action. And they know. They got spotters on both sides. They got fake fishermen. It's amazing how they just run the border. And these guys are doing, you know, 7, 10, 20. But, John, we visited the one of the major points, the World Trade entry. There's about, I don't know, 600 million a day coming through northbound. So you can't catch everything. You know, you can put them through scanners and all that. But, you know, last week they caught two trailers with dead bodies, you know. The big thing is human trafficking, aside from the dope smuggling. So we're out here looking at the technologies and seeing what these guys may need. For sure, they need more budget for staff. They're really, really great guys. I mean, really great guys. They work hard at, you know, trying to keep this place as tight as possible, but it's really rough, John.
Unsung heroes. I mean, the invasion that's going on at the southern border is horrific. Over a million people are going to be apprehended this year alone, over 100,000 a month. It just keeps getting bigger. They get no support. You've got Democrats running for president that want to fire them, abolish ICE, get rid of them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
We
actually need backup, and you do have it. There's some army, you know, with night scope stuff going on right at the. We were at the river crossing with night scopes. We saw all this stuff, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, they need more army. They need some National Guard. Great guys. I mean, they're overworked, you know, just burned out, and a lot of guys either quit, you know, or just. They burn out. So right. You got to always replenish. But, you know they have the support of the president, and they know they have the support of the administration. And they also know they don't have the support of the Congress.
Exactly. Now, look, it's you have I'm glad you're there to give us that update. I just talked to America Sheriff David Clark. He is a little further east than you are in Texas. Mm-hmm. And he's got a mile and a half of the wall built up with private funds. WeBuildTheWall.org.
That's another thing, John. The ranchers here, some of them are very accommodative, but they accommodate these guys. They let them get on their land. But there's some ranchers here that are very, very wealthy, and then they have some cattle and stuff, and they allow this, you know, this stuff to go on with these cartels, and it's not good. It's not good. They don't, you know, they tell customs go this way, go that way. They basically allow a lot of this stuff to come in because you got the labor problem. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And they're looking for cheap labor. But it's really dangerous to anybody that tries to cross that border, whether it's a single person or a family mother. We went and seen some of the apprehensions at border points, you know, where they have them. They come give them blankets and food. And
right. They
have all these Catholic charity organizations come pick them up. They get, John, you got to see what they get, man. Hotels, they get a lot of stuff, man. A lot of taxpayer dollars going out the back door, man. Really, really serious.
Yep, well, you got it. Well, look, I'm glad you're there. I'm going to try to get there in the next couple of weeks, and maybe we can hook up.
And by the way,
that.
We can't find Martha Bonetta. She must be in witness protection. I looked for her on the board. I can't find her, John.
Where is she? Isn't she down there every single week, right? Maybe she's
doing
one
of
those sand.
I mean, she says she's here once in a while, but, you know, we haven't seen her since, what was the last big event?
I really don't know where Martha Bonetta is. I really couldn't tell you.
Remember that little game they used to have the kids, Where's Carmen, whatever? She used to travel the globe. Well,
yeah,
we
what was that,
Martha
Carmen,
Bonetta,
what was it? Where
and is, it's a big place.
Yeah, where's Carmen? Yes, Kara, text me that. I forget who that was. Wait, I haven't seen her since. You're right. The last time I saw her was CPAC for like five minutes. But I'm sure her fans will update us as to her whereabouts.
Maybe she has that faceless book, that new one, the faceless book. You can't find her.
I'm sure if you went to her Facebook page right now, you would see exactly where she is. She lives on that page, but she'll be back. She'll appear. All of a sudden, like one day, she'll just call in the show from out of the blue.
Where are you now? Are you down south or are you up in the swamp?
No, I'm in Washington now, but I'm gonna get to
the
border
next
2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, you're going to get hit with the rains, man. Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to get there after the June 11th primaries, and we'll go from there. Colonel Mike, thanks.
All right, John,
man.
Have
good
a good
to,
show.
Good to hear from you, Colonel Mike, live at the border in Texas, checking things.
Talk radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBO.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Hundreds of people have gathered to remember the 12 victims of a mass shooting in Virginia. City and state officials were among the mourners Sunday at the vigil at Piney Grove Baptist Church in Virginia Beach. The vigil closed with the lighting of 12 candles standing alongside a framed photograph of the victim slain by a gunman Friday. A woman read each name aloud as she lit the candles. And the pastor of a Virginia church has asked God to give President Donald Trump wisdom to lead the country. Standing with President Trump at McLean Bible Church in Vienna, Pastor David Platt said Sunday that fools despise wisdom and instruction. Mr. Trump made an unannounced stop at the church after leaving his private golf club in Sterling, Virginia. The president bowed his head as Platt led the congregation in audible prayer. More details at srnnews.com.
Maybe you'd like to know what exactly Relief Factor is. It was created by doctors. It's a 100% drug-free supplement with four key ingredients that simply help your own body deal with the natural inflammatory response that it has. It's easy to swallow, four little capsules in each packet, like the packet that I carry with me at all times. Three packets a day for a week, then two packets a day for 2 weeks, and I have just described the three-week quick start. And you will know in 3 weeks, that's the beauty of it, whether it works. They don't drag you on. That costs just $19.95. There's a very good chance that a very serious percentage of my listeners suffer from some sort of muscular or joint pain. You should try this for $19.95. That's all you can lose. If it works, they will send it to you automatically. If it doesn't work, tell them not to send any shipments. And it's as simple as that. It is all at ReliefFactor.com. I've been using it for years now. Relief Factor.
Looking to jumpstart your career? If you're 18 or older with a high school diploma or GED and a valid driver's license, you're invited to attend the upcoming Healthcare Career Fair at Northeast Florida State Hospital in McClenny on Tuesday, June 4th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Positions are also available for nursing assistants. This is your chance to enjoy all the benefits of being a state of Florida employee, including great benefits like health care and 36 paid days off a year. Come find out more by attending the Healthcare Career Fair Tuesday, June 4th at Northeast Florida State Hospital in McClenny. Call 904-330-2708 for more info or visit jobs.myflorida.com. That's jobs.myflorida.com. Healthcare Career Fair, Tuesday, June 4th, 9 a.m. at Northeast Florida State Hospital in McClenny. 7487 Highway 121 South, McClenny. It's more than a job. It's a future.
Anytime is a great time to give flowers to the ones you love. At Kuhn Flowers, we know that all too well. That's why we offer the longest-lasting, most beautiful floral arrangements in Jacksonville. Kuhn Flowers has the perfect flower arrangements for birthdays, holidays, good days, and even bad days. Show that special someone just how much you care with a gift of flowers from Kuhn Flowers. Call us today at 398-8601. That's 398-8601. Or shop online anytime at kuhnflowers.com.
Will President Trump be able to stop Robert Mueller from testifying? Did Bill Barr really lie to Congress? And who really started Russiagate? Andy McCarthy will join me in studio to give you all of those answers on the next America First with me, Dr. G. We'll also speak to Boris Epstein about the clown car of 2020 Democrat candidates and also my Salem Radio colleague, Eric Metaxas, about his new national TV show.
America First with Sebastian Gorka, Saturday nights, 6 till 9 p.m. on WBOB.
The John Frederick Show.
And joining us now live from Denver, Elaine Parker. She is the spokesperson, executive director of communications for the Job Creators Network, and she was hosting a women's coalition, a panel discussion last night in Denver. Elaine, great to have you with us.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you about your women's coalition last night in Denver, and thanks for getting up early for us today. I know it's only 5 a.m. out there. Tell me about your network women's coalition, what it's about, and how you put it together.
Sure. The Job Creators Network has a national women's coalition, and what we do is we recruit successful female entrepreneurs to really help us get the message out about women and what a force they are in entrepreneurship. You know, there's 30 million small business owners in America, but 11.6 million of them are women-owned. That's 40%. Women-owned businesses out there. And as we look at the number of businesses that have just grown, small businesses that have grown over the last 20 years, they've grown by about 40% overall. But women-owned businesses have grown 114%. So they're an incredible force in this country. And what we did was got together last night with four women, and we were able to talk about everything from, early career to finding the passion to become an entrepreneur to the challenges from workforce to getting capital to dealing with regulations. It's just a fascinating conversation. And like their male counterparts, high taxes and regulations hurt them the same. But they're able to talk about different ways that they're able to navigate these systems and even mentors in their life. It was a fascinating conversation.
What's your objective here with this coalition? Because I love the idea of it. I love the fact that women's businesses are up 114%. I mean, that's a doubling plus number. Where do you want to take this? What's your vision?
Our National Women's Coalition is to amplify the voice of small business owners, just like every one of our members. But we really want to take the Women's Coalition and make sure that their voice is being heard and that people understand that women are succeeding in this economy, and they're succeeding because of lower tax rates. They're succeeding because of the cuts in regulations. And I don't think we hear from enough female entrepreneurs about how much the economy has really helped them and their businesses. Obviously, they're starting businesses at a faster rate. And just even from the standpoint of female employees, the unemployment rate for women last month is actually lower than for men. So like all demographic groups, we're seeing, very low unemployment rates. And we just want to amplify that message for this demographic group.
Elaine Parker with us, Chief Spokesperson and Communications Director for the Job Creators Network. Elaine, this resurgence, almost revolution, of women opening up businesses. Also, a part of that number, 65% of that 114% is women of color. So you've got women and you've got minority women opening up all these businesses all of a sudden. It is kind of an economic revolution we're having with this. What, when you get through the obvious things, the tax cut and everything else, what is really driving this, Elaine?
Well, I mean, the strong economy fueled by sound free market principles and policies that we've had in place over the last 2 years presents opportunities that aren't there when you have high unemployment or you have no job growth or stagnant wages. I mean, people don't have the opportunity to save money to take that plunge and take that risk to start their own business. And, as we're seeing wage growth and people are able to make these decisions, there's more jobs out there now than people, almost 2 million more jobs. That gives people a lot of leverage in making decisions on, do I want to take another job and work for someone else, or do I want to take that risk and start a business and start my own American dream? There's so many opportunities when the economy is this strong that we're seeing people of all color, women, men, take that plunge, and that's why we're seeing so many jobs be created every month.
It's interesting. When I took my master's level classes, let's see, 1981 or something, I remember one of my first advanced economic classes in graduate school. I remember the professor, you walked in there, and it was a economics, finance or something. And he wrote, back then there were no whiteboards, right? It was a chalkboard. And he wrote in the chalkboard, and it was like, some number, I'm trying to think of this, in 1980, it was like 72% of all small businesses fail, and 85% fail in the first 3 years. And so for a small business to make it, it's high risk, low reward, high work, and you have to make it through a three-year period or 4 years or something to be successful. I mean, I don't remember it exactly, but I remember that was like the first, you go in, you get your syllabus, and that's what the professor put on the board. And his point was, we don't have an economy that really supports small businesses, a huge risk. And so, young entrepreneurs getting out should really look to get a job in corporate America. I mean, that was a college professor's message, that almost all small businesses fail. What's different since 1980?
The opportunities and the ideas and the imagination and the entrepreneurship. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, we actually talked about education last night as well, and how in the past so many small business owners didn't talk to their employees about how they started their business, the challenges of starting a business. And so when things had it, when the economy had downturns in the past, suddenly the employees were being laid off and they had no idea. And so we really had a frank discussion about how important it is to educate your employees about how policies impact the business and ultimately their jobs. But it's helpful to those employees who may want to also take that plunge and understand that, yeah, it's a risk reward. I mean, there's huge challenges. There's lack of sleep and wondering how you're going to meet payroll and how are you going to have enough inventory on the shelves and how are you going to attract customers? Are you pricing your product correctly? But the reward is you grow a business and you create a family of employees, and you are supporting not just your and your family, but you're supporting your family of employees. And so everybody has a stake in it. And it's pretty incredible when you really bring people into the tent and help them understand how entrepreneurship works and how successful it can be.
Tell me a little bit about one of the things that when I looked at your forum last night, I thought this was a great question, and I just want you to elaborate on it, Elaine. You said that men are not asked about balance, family life, juggling. Like, they're never asked that, yet women are always asked that question. And as I was reading that, I was thinking about instances where I've asked that question myself, and people have asked that to my wife. Nobody ever asks me about that. They ask my wife about that. Is that an ingrained bias in society? Explain that.
You know, I'm a mom of two, so I don't see it as a bias. I'm not offended because somebody wonders how I am successful in my job and how I am a successful mother. I'm not offended by that. My daughters are extremely proud of their mom, and they talk about it all the time. And so the work-family balance, I'm not sure I know what that is. I mean, from day to day, I wonder, you know, am I doing it right? Am I balancing it right? I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is true. Men don't get asked that. And we joked about that a little bit last night. And, you know, sometimes I see that as an advantage for women, as, you know, obviously people think that we can handle more. And in some cases, I think we can. So I'm not offended by that question at all.
One of the things you mentioned last night is there are over 7 million job openings right now in America. So you said that we're staring down the barrel of a workforce shortage. And this is real. Now, this is a good problem, Elaine, not a bad problem, right? So this is a good challenge for us, not a bad challenge. But if you get a labor shortage here of 5, 6, 7 million people where there's just more jobs than available, people, obviously, wages get bidded up, so that's a good thing. But how do you fill those openings for businesses to continue to grow?
You know, that is a huge problem that, if anything of this economy, the biggest problem that we're going to have is the labor shortage. We are seeing wages grow at a faster pace than we've seen it in a decade, and that's great for middle class because the non-supervisory wages or blue-collar jobs are growing faster than white-collar jobs. So we know middle class is directly benefiting as a result. We see these, we see some of these large companies advertise what they're going to boost their starting wages for. Most recently, I read that Bank of America is going to boost their starting wage to $20 an hour. I mean, in some states, that's more than they pay teachers. So when you see a $20 an hour starting wage to work for Bank of America, it kind of makes the fight for $15 just irrelevant because the wages are going past that. So, you know, it's a natural occurrence that's happening as a result of the free enterprise. But we do have to address the workforce shortage, and we need to come up with ways to do that. I know the Trump administration is pursuing workforce development initiatives that's going to help match people up with the millions of unfilled available jobs, which will allow, you know, both the businesses and the individuals to take full advantage of the robust economy. Another way that we've talked about with you on the air, John, is this licensing reciprocity for military spouses. You know, we've taken up this fight to allow military spouses, when they move from state to state, to be able to have their occupational license accepted right away. So a dental hygienist, a paralegal, you know, I can think of multiple jobs, teachers even, so they don't have to get caught up in the bureaucracy. Well, that's a whole population of people that can now get to work immediately. And provide, you know, they can get a job immediately and obviously help stimulate the economy even more. So there's a lot of ways to attack this labor shortage that we're going to continue seeing.
I love the work you're doing. Let me ask you one more question, Elaine Parker. One of the things that you said last night is, what advice would you give to young women that are listening now, who are considering fields where men outnumber women significantly, like manufacturing, tech, law, although that's changing a little bit, energy. What would your advice be now to a young woman if they want to go into a field that is just, for whatever reason, dominated by men?
Well, each of us had answers for that, but the overall answers that came out, I think, were really good. Was, you know, to find your voice. You don't have to be the loudest. You don't have to sit in the room and cuss. You just have to find your voice and be heard. And a lot of that starts with preparation. You know your work, know your materials, and come to meetings, come into your workplace, and be prepared, and show that you know your material and that your opinion counts. That was really about it, is being prepared.
You know, I love the forum, and I love what you guys are doing. And these are just amazing numbers. And, you know, one of the things that you do, which is really bring this to light, 114% of women businesses increased by 114%, 65% of that minority women. I mean, these are stunning statistics that you never hear in the fake legacy news media, right? Never, right? They're never mentioned because at the end of the day, they don't care about the truth or what's happening. They just want to give this president and his economy any credit for anything. Elaine, people want more information on reciprocity. Where do they go?
On the reciprocity issue, they can go to freedomtowork.com. And there is a video on there about a woman named Michelle Hood, who's a dental hygienist, and she moved from Kentucky to Virginia, and she's been unable to utilize her dental hygienist license. It's the same work, but she's been unable to get a job in her field just because of the bureaucracy of her occupational license. And so we're seeing states like Kentucky and Iowa and even Arizona pass licensing reciprocity laws. But we're working with governors across the country, state by state, to get them to pass these laws so that these trailing military spouses can get to work right away. These spouses make incredible sacrifices for our country, and they have a 25% unemployment rate in that population. And when we have overall 3.2% unemployment rate, that's just heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking that this population has such a high unemployment rate.
John Fredericks Radio Network, I want to thank Elaine Parker for being with us, spokesperson and vice president of communications for the Job Creators Network. Look, find out more. Go to thegreenrawdeal.com, thegreenrawdeal.com. You can also text join JCN to 52886, 52886. Join JCN, text it to 52886. Elaine, thanks for being with us live in Denver.
I'm your Godzilla of the Truth in America. This is where Trump Nation comes to talk in the morning. Great to have you with us on the John Fredericks Radio Network. And we're going to go right to the phone lines with Ellie in Chesapeake. Ellie, you're on the air.
Can you hear me, John?
Yes, Ellie. Go ahead.
Okay. You know I love to listen to you, but if you're going to play Tim Kaine, it gives me a stomachache. I'm a Virginia resident, and he makes me want to throw up. Because if he's talking, he's lying. That's my first comment. Second comment is Chesapeake Bay Cleanup. I am a big-time volunteer and supporter of that, but I don't think Tim Kaine is. And I've been doing it for a good 10 years, 15 years, something like that. And so Pennsylvania was in the news for not doing much, for cleaning up the bay. Has he reached out? I mean, he's a big Democrat, supposed to be Earth-friendly, and has he reached out and said, hey, Pennsylvania, why don't you do your part? I'm thinking, no. Secondly, on the point that you made about Yemen and how he was talking about we need to get out of there, America cannot hide from the world. We're great. We know we're great, and we can't hide from the rest of the world. So that's my comment on that. And lastly, he was talking about us giving arms to the Saudis. Iran and Saudi are having like a proxy war, and Saudi is developing defensive mechanisms because of Iran. So we can't hold that against them because they want to defend their area. I mean, that's ridiculous. So I'm just wondering, is he on the earth and breathing the same oxygen that we are? Because what I see is he just got out of bed with Hillary Clinton. They lost. And he's trying to make, you know, some kind of progress. You got a comment on that, John?
Yes. Thank you. All right. Number one, I'm sorry you turned your stomach. I really apologize for that, especially at 6 a.m. We don't want to do that. But here's the deal.
Right.
I believe in getting all voices on my show. I think you know that. So that's why I have Democrats on, because if you don't know what they're thinking and you don't know what they're doing, then you're less informed. And I like to do it in a respectful manner where you can actually have a conversation, which then allows people like yourself, Ellie, to call in and comment on it rather than have a shouting match on, you know, cable TV, which is what I did for a long time, which is basically worthless. So, you know, you have Tim Kaine. We had him on for 20 minutes. You're going to get some insight. So that's why we do it. And I will continue to do that, whether it be Tim Kaine, Mark Warner, Terry McAuliffe, Bobby Scott, or other Democrats that are willing to come on my show and have a respectful conversation. So that's why I do it. And, you know, you can turn the volume down when he's on. But I think had he not been on, you wouldn't have had these three questions. So let me address those. Yemen. I'm for getting out of that war. I was not in favor of getting involved in it with Obama. When Obama made the deal with Iran, the Saudis were upset over it. And in order to placate them, he agreed to get us involved in Yemen. It is a humanitarian crisis, Ellie, beyond anything you can imagine. Infants, children are starving. They're eating leaves off trees. The mortality rate there is beyond the pale. And there's no need for us to get involved in that. And the Saudis and the UAE, their coalition has been a catastrophe. They're losing the war to the Houthis. They're going to split the country eventually. And our bombs are made in USA bombs are blowing up, let's see, markets, hospitals, and school buses. I mean, the Saudis are the most this is the most incompetent military led by Mohammed bin Salman, who was totally incompetent. And so it's a disaster. And so I'm not in favor of us being there. I wasn't in favor of us getting in, but I'm in favor of us getting out. And I don't care who I've got on, I'm going to press them to get out. And the president, when he went down that escalator, one of the things why I backed him before anybody in the country and media is because one of the platforms that President Trump had was to get out of these foreign entanglements, and Yemen is not somewhere we should be. So I agree with Kaine on that. As far as selling arms to the Saudis, as long as Mohammed bin Salman is there and as incompetent and a buffoon as he is, I'm not in favor of that either. Look, I'm in favor of getting out of these foreign entanglements. And the Saudis are trying to use the United States as a proxy in some kind of a manufactured war against Iran, who has 8 speedboats and a few missiles. They don't have a pot to piss in. And look, I remember going through the whole George W. Bush, Don Rumsfeld lying to me about WMDs in Iraq that never existed. So I don't believe the government. I don't believe when they say this country has this and that country has that, right? There are neocons and warmongers that are entrenched in Washington that make billions of dollars off these wars that they misinform the public on. There were never any WMDs. There was no reason for us to go into Iraq. Here we are, what, 12 years later, 15? We're still there? I mean, we have it's been a horrific situation. You got to ask yourself, would the U.S. be better off today if Saddam Hussein was still there? The answer, yes. Would the Iraqi people have been better? I have no idea. I don't care. I care about us. So on those two issues, I happen to be where Tim Kaine is. And he's also for Scott Taylor for ambassador to Qatar, and I'm for that. So look, you can always find common ground, Ellie, but I am not in favor of the U.S. continuing to fund the Saudis, sell them weapons, be involved in these wars, and turn into some kind of a proxy with a manufactured war with Iran. They have 15% unemployment among people under 30 years old. The country is going to collapse from within. They don't have a pot to piss in. Why are we talking about going to war with them? It's insanity beyond belief. And so I'm gonna lobby anybody to get out of these wars. And if Kaine is in favor of that, I'm in favor of it.
It's okay for Iran to be cool and enrich uranium and have long-range missiles, but, you know, nothing to worry about there, right?
No, absolutely nothing. Look, if they ever got to the point that they would be near a nuclear warhead, what do you think the state of Israel is going to do? Stand around? I mean, that's their war. We can't manage everything that goes on in the world. So what? They might get a bomb, so we, what, invade the country? And that will be there for another 30 years? Because they might get uranium? The whole thing's asinine. What the president has done is he said, look, I'm going to strangle them economically, and if you do business with them, you're not going to do business with the United States. And if I continue to put pressure on them, what choice do they have but to change their behavior? Through economic calamity. That's the president's mission, not invading countries, and his instincts are sound.
Hey, I'll leave you with something positive.
Good.
I love President Trump, and I would still vote for him today. I have never wavered on that. And I also think Scott Taylor is awesome, awesome, awesome. And I would vote for him again, but I would never vote for Tim Kaine. Ever.
Well, look, that's a positive. I didn't vote for him either. So, it's, you know, it's all good, right? I mean, I didn't vote for him.
Have a great day, John.
I didn't vote for Corey Stewart either. I voted for whoever the libertarian was. I couldn't vote for Stewart. So, I don't even remember his name. Ellie, thank you. Always good to have a great, lively discussion. I appreciate it. And without having Tim Kaine, Bobby Scott, Terry McAuliffe, Mark Warner, and other Democrats on, Dick Saslow, whomever, you wouldn't be able to have these lively dialogues. John Fredericks, Radio Network. Stay with me.
You're listening to The John Fredericks Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.